Three.
Okay, call the meeting to order for the, this is the December Economic Development, Tourism, Housing, Planning and Transit Committee meeting. We're gonna be covering two legislative sessions in this meeting, December 2nd and December 21st. So at this time, we'll ask to please stand for the pledge to the flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic
for which it stands,
one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. So I assume everyone has read the minutes and approves of them. If so, would you, someone please give me a motion to accept the minutes from the November 8th meeting?
I'll make the motion.
I'll second that.
Okay, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Thank you. Okay, so so tonight, like I said, we're gonna be doing two sessions worth of resolutions. We'll do for the December 2nd meeting first and then 21st after that. So for the December 2nd session, we have these two very important resolutions are in regard to the, I guess it's Tech City formerly, but I will now start referring to it as Enterprise East or hopefully iPark 87 soon or something different in Tech City, that's for sure. resolution number 548 is authorizing the acceptance of deeds in lieu of foreclosure of certain properties from AG Properties of Kingston LLC and Tech City 22, 23, and 24 LLC. We move that for discussion. Legislator Archer, second. Legislator Litz, any discussion? Legislator Archer?
To confirm, at some point, I thought the number was 12 million for unpaid taxes. So I'm a little confused. I'm looking at this and it says 10. Can anybody just enlighten me on that? Did I have the number wrong?
Mr. Chairman?
Yeah, go ahead. Tim, if you want to take over and answer that, I'd be glad.
Sure. I'll just point out that in our discussions of the 12 million number, that includes some parcels that are currently owned by the county and are not subject to this deed in lieu of foreclosure transaction. These are just the parcels that Allen remains in ownership of. And the total tax arrears on those are closer to 10 million.
And we have two pieces from the east side that are, we already have the deed for.
I think it's actually three okay. Parcels on the east side. Yes.
Thank you for the clarification.
Yep. Any other questions or comments? All right, I'm gonna make a quick comment because this is a very important thing that we're doing here. As Pat has said many times, the executive has said many times, this is a transformational proposition that we're entering into here. This is a parcel that's been sitting basically empty and deteriorating for over 20 years. And the current owner has neglected to take care of it. As a matter of fact, I got a call today from someone who works there and says there's no heat in the building right now. So the sooner we can get this in responsible hands, the better the county will be. So I'm, with that said, I'll just call for the vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed? All right, thank you. The second thing we're gonna be doing is resolution number 549, which will be setting a public hearing on the transfer of the certain properties from Ulster County to the Ulster County Economic Development Alliance Incorporated to be held on Tuesday, December 21st, 2021 at 6:30 p.m. I'll accept the motion to move that. Second, any discussion on the public hearing to transfer to UCEDA? Okay, this is just a formal process that we have to go through. UCEDA has to take ownership of it for 90 days prior to the transfer to the permanent owner. So I'll then call for the vote. Any other discussion? Anybody have anything else you want to add? Okay, all those in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right, thank you. And I just want to just take 5 seconds here to commend Tim, Tim Wiedemann.
Tom's my dad. I'll pass your regards along, Brian.
Tim Wiedemann for his work on this. This was an unbelievable, complex deal that Tim had to walk through and get everybody to agree on. You know, one of the things that we heard in conversation during this whole negotiation from the EPA was that if we pull this off, they want to use this as a model as to how public, private, and government, public, private owner, and, you know, new developers can work in cooperation to take care of these type of situations where we have an environmental issue, a place that needs to be economically developed, and a government willing to do all they can to help. It's really a model of cooperation from multiple levels of government, from the property owner and the purchaser. So, you know, nobody came out of this 100% in you know, positive, right? However, the overall process is 100% positive, right? You know, everybody had to give up a little bit to get it to where it is. To me, that's a perfect deal, right? And I just couldn't be happier that, you know, Tim was able to coordinate this and get it done. And I just wanted to publicly thank him for his hard work and everything to get this past the finish line.
All right. Thank you. Legislator Cahill, if I can just say thank you to you and to all the legislators. I know this moved quickly, but I appreciate everybody's good questions and support. So thanks. Thanks, everyone. This is exciting. There's still more work to do, and we'll be before you at the second session and then in the 21st as well. So more to come.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. So we're now going to move on to the December 21st resolutions. We're going to start with resolution number 325, which is establishing the Land Bank Development Corp. And the sponsor asked me to take no action on this one more time. But the discussion I had with the sponsor today was that we really do want to take some action on the four houses that we kept off the tax rolls next year. So my suggestion will be that we somehow or another make this a priority item the first of the year. If I'm still chairing this committee, I will make it a priority. But if not, whoever is on the committee, we should make this a priority item to get those four houses working, get those things back where someone can live in them. That's the purpose of why we kept them off the tax roll, to put people who need those houses in them. We can do both things. We can work in parallel, right? We can walk and chew gum at the same time. And come January, we're going to have to do a lot of that, right? So this is going to be, for me, a priority item to, you know, make sure that we have those four houses in capable hands and being redeveloped so people in need can move in there and start a family, you know, or move their family into a decent housing in a nice neighborhood, right? So that's what we're going to do there, hopefully. So resolution number 573 is reappointing a member and alternate to the Ulster County Planning Board in the town of Rochester. Lynn, would you like to move that? Second?
I'll second that.
Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Okay. Thank you. Resolution number 574 is reappointing a member and alternate to the Ulster County Planning Board from the town of Marlborough. Tom, is that you?
Yeah, that's us.
Would you like to move this?
Somebody else can.
Okay.
Uh-oh. I'll move it for discussion.
Okay. We have a second. Second from Legislator Archer. Is there any discussion? Okay, then. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, abstain? Okay.
I'll abstain.
Okay, and your reason for abstaining, Tom?
Work-related.
Okay, thank you. Okay, so it's you got that vote, Fawn? Okay, thank you. We're going to go move into, sorry, I have two pages here. Resolution 575, which is supporting a grant application to New York State Department of Transportation for public transportation modernization and enhancement, funding for bus and bus facilities capital investment program. That is a mouthful. Authorizing the Ulster County Executive to execute any required applications or agreements to accept funding for the Department of Public Transportation, UCAT.
I'll move it.
Okay. Second?
I'll second.
Okay. Any discussion on this? Tony, do you want to comment on any of these, or are these just our annual?
There are annual apportionments from the state, and they're all 100% state funded. So it's at no cost to the county, that and the ATC application, which will probably be the next resolution.
Great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Any other discussion? Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. So we'll move on to 576, which is authorizing the chair of the Ulster County Legislature to extend an intermunicipal agreement with the town of New Paltz to provide public transit service to the New Paltz area, the New Paltz Loop, and Department of Public Transportation, UCAT.
I'll move it for discussion.
Okay.
Second it for discussion.
Okay. All right. So what kind of discussion we have here? I feel like there is some. Okay. Legislator Litz.
Yeah, I take it this is just an extension of the agreement that started January 1st, 2011, I believe.
Right. I remember when that happened.
And it says it ends June 30th of 22. So this is really just a 6-month contract.
So we're extending this contract for 6 months during COVID. We had extended the contract during COVID, and beginning in January, we are going to meet with the town of New Paltz and go over some of the details of a contract and try to come up with a new one. But for right now, we just are extending it for 6 months, beginning January 1st.
Do you anticipate it being extended, or are there some roadblocks there? Or
no, I don't anticipate anything different than what we have now.
Okay, good. That's good to hear. Okay.
Can I, if I may, Chairman Cahill?
Yeah, go ahead.
I'll just mention, I know it's not my district, but I have a special fondness for this particular service because I was in student government when we lobbied for this, and it was one of my first engagements as a 19-year-old with the Ulster County government. And I was very proud to see it happen when we made it happen then. And I intend to wholeheartedly support it and for as long as we can. I think it's a very valuable service.
Yeah, I agree. Okay, any further discussion? Okay, all those in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, great. So 577 is authorizing a chair legislator to execute an agreement with the New York State Department of Transportation to accept New York State funds for Ulster and Dutchess County Public Transit Service Link for the Department of Transportation, UCAT. Accept a motion for.
I'll move it.
Move. Okay. Second, Legislator Archer. Anybody have any questions about this? Or I actually do. Has the ridership on that improved? Or, I know COVID, it probably dropped down to practically nothing, right?
It did. Yeah. And actually, we had suspended the runs for a while, but right now ridership, it's starting to come back. Not as well as we would have hoped, but with all the new COVID mandates and the viruses, I think people, number one, aren't going to work, and they just haven't been going out and riding public transit.
Yeah, public transit is still way down everywhere, double digit percentages everywhere, right?
Right.
If not,
we're running at 90% service right now. We have almost all of our routes covered, but with a shortage of drivers, we're having a hard time filling that extra 10%.
Mm-hmm.
But hopefully after the first of the year, it'll get better.
Yes, we hope so. I just can't wait for things to get back to normal, and our discussion is the bus big enough, right?
Yeah.
All right. Any other discussion on this one? Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, great. Thank you. We're going to move on to 578, which is supporting a grant application to New York State Department of Transportation for public transportation accelerated transit capital grant funding. authorizing county executive to execute any required applications or agreements to accept funding Department of Transportation, UCAT.
So moved.
Second?
Second.
Second. Any discussion on this one? This is just the recurring funding, Tony?
Recurring funding, and that also is 100% state funded.
Got it. We love those. We get something back. It's always good. All right. Okay, all those in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Great, thank you. So 579 is designating the Ulster County Department of Tourism as the official tourism promotion agency of Ulster County Department of Tourism. I'll accept the motion. Actually, I'll make the motion. We move this.
I'll second it.
Okay. You like any comments, Lisa?
None really, except that you do this annually and it allows us to participate in all of the I Love New York promotions and allows our tourism partners to be a part of I Love New York, and it allows us to claim matching funds state aid. So thank you for your consideration. Right. Thank you.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Okay, great. 598 is approving the execution of a contract for $382,750 entered into by the county, the B&C Incorporated, doing business as Balo and Company, Department of Tourism. Move for discussion.
I'll move it.
Okay, second. You got those, Fawn? Abe and Jim? Jim moved, Abe second. Okay. Any discussion? Would you like to give us a brief overview on this, Lisa, please?
Sure. I kind of ran through some of the work that they did for us this year and some of the results that they had. I'm not sure if you guys remember when I gave my budget report, but they we had an over 23% increase in followers on our Instagram this year, over 53% increase in followers in Facebook. We saw our digital advertising campaign perform 30% above the industry benchmark, and referrals to book direct to our website went up by 50%. Now, those were a direct change in some strategy that we developed. In addition, they have been in the process of developing a brand new website for us, and we've been working in tandem with information services on that, and it will ultimately allow us to do some e-commerce directly from our sites, where people can book activities and things to do directly from our site to our partners in the tourism industry, as well as be able to book their overnight. So really create their own itinerary and book all of it before they get here. So we're very excited by the work that they've done for us, and we're happy with it.
Yeah, Legislator Litz.
This is a 1-year extension?
It is.
Okay.
So how far out, what is the expansion on the county-based website reservation things? What's just a link to reservation to other places, or how does that actually work? And so, and does it include, you know, like restaurants and all of that as well? Yeah.
So Book Direct does not include restaurants. It's just for overnight accommodation, which is really what helped us have a 161% growth this year in our occupancy tax. So what we did was, so the Book Direct is a microsite where it allows people, they click through, it's on our website, the consumer can see, it's like a book now for this price type thing, and the prices are all there for any of the properties that participate in it. And 78% of our properties participate in Book Direct. It doesn't cost them anything. The county pay for that service.
Yeah, right. Huh, that's good. Mm-hmm. Legislator Archer.
So, and we're able then to capture how much traffic we're putting through to our various hotels and et cetera, right?
So I can't capture their conversion. That's private information. I proprietary back to the property,
But if it's helpful to all of the legislators here, Legislator Archer and Chairman Cahill, I do have reporting information through a different service that tells me about Airbnb. And it's called AirDNA, and I can see on a monthly basis, you know, how many bookings there have been. It tells me quite a bit.
Does it then correlate to what we're bringing in occupancy tax, or is it close, or is it predictable?
I send those reports on to the director of finance, and the correlation isn't directly one-to-one, but what we've found, the commissioner of finance has told me is that he finds it useful because he has a different tool. And so it's useful for us to have two different tools to have a complete picture. And keep in mind that AirDNA is only capturing Airbnbs. Mm-hmm. It's not capturing hotels or motels or anybody who's not listed on their platform. Mm-hmm. So it can't in real time tell me what's going on, but it's a good indication. It allows you to see the ebbs and flows, right? It allows you to make better decisions with your marketing money.
Yeah. One more follow-up. Mm-hmm. Did this contract go up from last year?
This was the amount last year. It's up from when Rick did it. The last RFP was issued while Rick was still director, and they were the ones who won that RFP, and their bid was for $382. Okay. So it's the same amount as last year.
It seemed higher, but mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yep, you're welcome.
I got a quick question. So when someone goes to the website and they click, you know, book a room, can we tell if whether they've actually, you know, when they do click and go out of our website, can we track that traffic? We can't even track that, people who are leaving our website through a link?
I'm not allowed. They can't.
We should. This is Alan. We should. It's called a refer. And yes, we can see when people click off and go somewhere else. Right. So yes, through our Google Analytics, we should be able to see that. Yes.
Right. But the question about the way that Book Direct works is I can't see if it converted.
That's okay.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah.
I don't really care if it converted, right? I mean, I do care. Right. But for the purposes that I'm thinking about is it effective, right? In other words, how many people are coming to the website and then leaving using those tools to book a room or to book, you know, the bike trail, a bike rail or whatever, you know, that kind of thing. Okay, great. Yeah, I mean, I'm happy with the improvement last year, mm-hmm. considering the type of year it was, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, when things calm down, it's just, you know, going to be nuts around here, you know. Anyway. Okay. Are any other questions or comments on this resolution 598? Okay, I'll call for the vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Herb's opposed. Okay. Thank you. Resolution 599.
No, I'm not opposed.
Oh, you were just a little late. I think you're a little delayed.
There's a delay for some reason. I am not opposed.
Okay, good. You got that for one? All right, great. Thank you. Sorry about that, Herb. Resolution 599. Approving the execution of a contract amendment for $8,380.80, causing the aggregate contract plus amendment amount to be in excess of $50,000 entered into by the county for Acumatic Computer Systems Incorporated for the Department of IS. Anyone want to move that?
I'll move it for discussion.
And second by
second. Second.
Okay. Alan, you want to give us a brief overview of?
Sure. So this is software support and maintenance for mental health legacy system. It's really it's a required system. It is legacy, but we're maintaining it at a lower cost for maintenance, primarily because we're moving into updated operating system. We want to make sure that the vendor can continue to support that. So the cost of this is really just software and maintenance at a lower rate. As we move into newer operating systems and making sure that the application continues to function.
Right. And so when you go into the new operating system, will you be moving off of this at some point?
Well, it's really, we need to work with mental health to see if there's any replacement for this. So this is a pretty important application. We do need to get off our off these operating systems, these Windows 7 operating systems. So this particular application has support from the vendor on Windows 10. And so it gives us some time to, you know, work with mental health to see if there's any replacements for this.
Gotcha. Any questions or comments? Abe, go ahead.
Yeah, Alan, would it be an accurate statement that this is the last renewal that we'll see for this vendor?
It's possible, yeah, it's possible. Again, the purpose of this application is to find a replacement for this application, I think is gonna be a challenge. And I think the point that we wanted to make sure that we could at least continue to, or that mental health could continue to function with this application while we continue to investigate replacements for this. You know, I think our goal would be to replace it. Again, I think we want to make sure that we can continue to, that mental health can continue to operate as we investigate. This could be the last renewal. I don't want to make any guarantees, but that's our goal, is to get off of it at some point in the near term. Yeah.
And can I just ask a follow-up?
Go ahead.
Actually, I'd like to hear from Deputy Executive Ryder before I ask a follow-up.
Yeah.
It would be likely, though, that if we were putting another amendment forward, that we would have converted it over to Windows 10. No, Alan? Like, if we continue with this vendor, you said they're supported by Windows 10, so we would just hopefully shift it over there.
Well, yeah, so it's really the application is still the legacy application. It's not a replacement of the application, but it's really the maintenance of this app, of this the existing application without any modern improvements or enhancements. It's really just to be able to support it on Windows 10.
It is needed for our nursing. It is needed for some of our nursing over at our mental health.
So we're working with the vendor to see if there's a replacement for this. You know, we hope to have something more sustainable in the near term.
What so is my follow-up? Yeah, go ahead.
If I can just ask my follow-up question is, do you feel, Director Macaluso, that you have the bandwidth to review alternatives to this and it, while maintaining everything else? Like, I just want to make sure that this is a priority. And I'm also curious if the bandwidth in the mental health side is there to really dedicate time to figuring out how to transition the software.
I mean, that's a really good question. I think one of the reasons for preserving this is because it is an operational tool. It's in practice. To answer your question, we are strapped. Both mental health and information services are strapped for resources. The point about really getting this application at its current state is primarily to preserve the functionality of the application for mental health, and from an information services perspective, to remove the vulnerability that Windows 7 is introducing into our environment. So to get it to a point where we can have an operating system that is secure and not at risk, but also to continue to provide functionality for mental health. Your question is a really good question, and I think our goal is to continue to work with the vendor Acumedic to see if there's a replacement or some other feature enhancements or modernization of this application moving forward.
Mark, go ahead.
There was a time when kind of these apps and software in the county, it was the wild, wild west with departments just going out and procuring whatever they felt like they needed, and IS was not brought in. I'll say that started to really shift when Jose De Leon was the director, and it's continued to shift with Alan. And now he has a deputy that is really focused on meeting with department heads to really bring IS in all of those decision points. And we anticipate that there are a lot of these legacy systems that are at issue right now, but going forward, we'll have less of them over time.
And our goal is also just not from this particular application, but it's at a broader view, is that there are you know, HIPAA compliant and PCI compliant and other types of compliant cloud-based applications that are potential replacements, not just for this, but other other tools within the county. And to Deputy Ryder's comments, you know, we're trying to see, you know, across the board, it's trying to leverage, you know, economies of scale for certain types of, in certain circumstances where we have overlapping needs and functionality. And again, that's, we're spending a lot of effort really interviewing the departments and finding if there's any overlapping needs. And this may not be one of those needs, but the point being that there are other tools out there in the marketplace that might, you know, that might provide the functionality, be compliant in various ways, get us off of legacy hardware, et cetera, and we are, you know, not just with this application, but a whole suite of applications where we're approaching it from that perspective.
Okay. Any other questions? Yeah, let's Sir Archer.
Yeah, it's not per se specifically to this, but it brings it to me. It kind of begs the question. This is a system that is critical to mental health. So when you look across the government, are there like top five systems that you're going to be looking at and addressing in 2022 so that we can move to what, more cloud-based, more applications versus legacy systems?
The short answer is yes. I mean, we have a lot of, like, for instance, we have AS/400 servers, which are the old IBM AS/400 servers. There's legacy applications on there that we're peeling off and modernizing. Some of them are being web enabled. They're very, you know, purpose-built applications that were built in-house that we're converting them to web-based applications. There's a handful of applications on there that are, however, really extremely complicated. And they are, and so our goal is to move off them as quickly as possible because of the risk that the hardware presents. So that same kind of philosophy, though, is in play when we're looking at other legacy systems out there that, for instance, this, again, Acumedic is a similar, is an interesting example because it's running on, you know, legacy hardware. It's Windows 7 desktop machine that's running a legacy application that's become really instrumental. So how do you, the trick is really, how do you change the engine while you're still flying, right? So that's the trick that we're, the tightrope that we're walking on. But again, there are vendors out there in the world that provide various kinds of functionality. We just need to do the due diligence. And to your point, Legislator Uchitel, is that we need a certain amount of brain power, both from the stakeholders, in this case, the mental health and IS, to kind of come together and really understand what is the deliverable of the application and find either a vendor that's can be deployed either on site or a vendor that could be deployed in the cloud. And that, you know, that requires a really solid sort of a solutioning practice that really digs into the details and understands what's the end state of this. And so we are working on that. And my deputy, Dan Proctor, has begun the process of interviewing the various departments and building a matrix, if possible, to see that there's overlapping, where there's overlapping functionality. So we could, in theory, use an application like Salesforce, which can cut across multiple departments, for example. I'm not saying that's a solution, but that's, we could look at multiple applications that could be rolled into a framework like Salesforce, for example.
You know? What are the top five, though? And it's Legislative Archer. That's okay. It's hard sometimes with Zoom. The top five areas of focus, would you say, for 2022?
Again, our AS/400s need to be sunsetted as soon as possible because their hardware maintenance is
and they support what area?
They support, there's a driver safety database on there. There is a mileage tracker database on there. There is the unpaid taxes application and one other, which I'm drawing a blank on, for example. But I mean, we had a hardware crash on our AS/400 recently. Unfortunately, fortunately, we dodged a bullet on that, but it's just a matter of time. Hardware support is no longer available on that platform. So we need to get off of that as quickly as possible. So that's one of our primary focus, to get off of that, because it delivers a lot of benefit in that we can get onto modern platforms, but then we can decommission these old platforms, which costs, that have maintenance costs, that have power costs, that have cooling costs and other sort of, you know, hidden costs that we need to kind of just remove them from the equation.
Thank you.
All right. Any other comments or questions? Okay, then I'll call for the vote. That's on resolution 599. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, so then we're going to move on to the last resolution, which is resolution number 600. Which is approving the execution of a contract for $61,746 entered into the county for Navient, the Department of Information Services.
So this application.
We got to move it.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. I'll move it.
Second, Lisa Archer. Okay, thanks. Go ahead, Alan. Thank you.
This software application, which is OnBase, which is our digital document management platform. It was initially supported by a vendor called Continuum. This vendor is, the product is now supported by a vendor called Navient. So this is a new contract for this new vendor. Moving forward, it's a really software and maintenance. It's a new contract with this new vendor. And it, again, it's for our document management platform under a new vendor.
Okay. Any questions, comments? Okay, I'll call for the vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, thank you. So under old business, I just want to ask Planner Doyle if he could just give me, I left you a phone message and earlier this evening. I don't know if you got it yet, but it's about the Kingston Meadows project. They reached out to me again today. Asking about that. And I think they also reached out to Fawn about it. And so I'm just wondering, you know, where I'm looking really for guidance from the planning department on how we should approach this. Because my last understanding was that the Kingston was waiting for us to approve the easement. And, you know, my take is I'm waiting for Kingston to approve the project, right? Before we give them the easement. So it's kind of like a Mexican standoff, I guess. I don't know. Is there any way you can give us a little update on that, Dennis, if you know anything?
Sure. The way that the Kingston Planning Board level is they won't approve the project site plan until they have access. So I'm not sure why that's the case, but that's what the planning board at the Kingston level has decided. And then there was a question with respect to whether or not their secret determination, the State Environmental Quality Review Act determination, was current. And I believe that's been cleared up, but I'm not sure. So the next steps at the county level would be to hold a necessary public hearing. We held a public hearing on this a while back, but I think it'd be prudent to hold another one, given the time that's gone by, to hold a necessary public hearing to surplus the property. You would surplus, what you're surplusing is literally an easement over the county's Ulster and Delaware corridor. And then from that, you would end up moving, you could surplus that either to the Development Corporation at the USITA or to the Housing Development Corporation, one of the two. And then from there, there would be a real estate transaction with the owners of this property. And they are proposing to construct, I don't know the number of units, but it's a senior housing complex on the land involved. And it would be a low-income housing tax credit project, which would be similar to what we're proposing on Golden Hill.
Yeah, so my concern is it's over railroad tracks, correct? That Catskill Mountain Railroad uses for their tourism train, is that correct?
Yes, but we've had, in the past, we've had discussions with the railroad in terms of the safety of that. We've also had discussions because it's also over the proposed Kingston Rail Trail. We've also had discussions with respect to that. So we don't believe, and nor did the railroad believe, that there was a safety issue with respect to that. And one would presume that what you would end up doing is that any additional cost associated with the fact that there's a road over that railroad, those additional costs would be borne by the developer. I mean, if that's what I would be thinking about if depending upon where they get surplus. So if there's need for warning signals and stops, et cetera, that those costs would end up being borne by the developer.
And who would determine that if they were needed?
My sense would be is that you're going to have a crossing on a railroad. And so that there would be a need to essentially either stop the train and before you cross, or to institute some sort of additional crossing restrictions relative to those folks that are there. But my first sense would be is it would be a crossing that would require a stop. But I would leave that this determination to the railroad itself.
Abe, this is your district, correct?
Yeah. And I actually went out there. I met with one of the neighboring, you know, this is a tricky issue because the developer seems to be seeking every possible solution all at once, which has pulled in a neighboring property. And they asked me to meet with them, the neighboring property, the Best Western. And while I was there, I did a walk, I did my own kind of stroll down the corridor. And I can see, you know, the right-of-way issue being resolved. I have a bigger concern about the project itself. And at the end of the day, that's not going to be up to us. So when we, you know, upon the opportunity to review the right-of-way issue, I suspect we'll have to put out of our minds the other issues with, you know, building a facility that they want to build next to the thruway and so forth in a wetland, because really our question is going to be the right of way. And I can imagine physically being there, you know, just a couple of weeks ago and looking at how it all would work, I could see it being possible.
So then, Dennis, my last question would be, do you recommend then that we go ahead and schedule a public hearing for?
We could prepare the resolution on that. We had conversations with the developer and indicated that we thought that this would come to fruition probably after the budget work got done and other stuff got done. And we would be looking at this sometime in January.
Okay. So then let's plan on Fawn and Dennis, if you guys could get together, and we'll plan on putting this on the January agenda and put the public hearing out there for this easement, if everybody's agreeable. Okay. Is there any other old business that anyone would like to discuss?
I may, Chairman Cahill, I just want to say, while we have Director Macaluso here, the Democratic Caucus last night received a presentation around the Constituent Services Navigator, and we got to see some of the inner workings that IS has been involved in using technology like Telxio and Bluebird. And I just want to say, I am so incredibly impressed. I was part of some of the initial conversations because I was volunteering in the COVID hotline and the Emergency Operations Center in March of 2020. And when it became clear that we needed to stand up a phone system and just the progress that's been made and the how robust the system is and the fact that it can really potentially become something that we fund on an ongoing basis, I think is a testament to Alan's work. And I just wanted to publicly say thank you. And I'm very, very impressed and very excited about the impact it could have on our constituents long beyond COVID.
Right.
Yeah, well, thank you. Thank you for that. I mean, I deserve less credit than Jeff at the innovation team, because while we plumbed the system and kind of put some solutions in place, Jeff and his team really kind of built out the framework operationally. But we've been working very intimately with Jeff and his team to figure out what's the next gen of this, what this will look like, what it could look like. And there's some overlapping, you know, concerns. I think Legislator Archie, you mentioned some of the priorities that we have in 2022. One of those is, looking at our VoIP system and our communications platforms with Teams, et cetera, and other kinds of channels and evolving this into a more of like a a universal communications as a service platform where we have a VoIP in the cloud and call center capabilities and integrations with Teams and other things. So that's that kind of dovetails, it kind of supports the constituent service navigator concept, but it also scales the county too in a way. What things that we learned, lessons learned that from COVID, is that our hardware platform on our VoIP system is not robust. It could be more robust. And when we look at the features and advancements that the unified communications platforms deliver, we could be taking advantage of so much more at scale. And that when the next either power outage or the next pandemic or the next, you know, storm, and the remote workforce capabilities that we've all sort of come accustomed to, it scales in that direction. So that we're looking in that way, and the lessons we learned from the constituent navigator service and the scaling that was necessary for that, we can see that scaling more broadly to the county at large, you know. So, and Jeff's experience in that space with the recovery service center is really, really important for us to leverage that from lessons learned, and then to bring that forward into a much more broader strategy, you know.
Yeah. Well, I just want to echo Abe's good work, Alan. Good
Thank
work.
You. Thank you.
Any other new business before we adjourn? I will look at Herb for
a moment. I'll make a motion for adjournment, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. I'll second that.
Okay. Thank you, everyone, and we'll see you in a couple of days. Oh,
aye.
Aye.
All right. Good night.
See everybody on December
2nd. Take care, everyone.
Happy birthday.
Bye-bye. I joined late, Brian, so I didn't get a chance to wish you happy birthday, but happy birthday.
Thank you very much. Happy birthday. Appreciate it. All right. Bye-bye.